I'll let you guys figure out how you want to start it, since I'm going to be closing, essentially.
Right. Well, in that case, maybe Tessa, you should start it, because you actually have experience doing this. This is the first time that I've put voice on the internet.
Yeah, we'll call it experience. See, there's a couple ways we could do this. It could either be like, oh, I'll just start a cold start here. Or it's one of those things where it's like, hey, there's snippets of a conversation that we cut off at the end, and then we go right into it. I don't know.
How'd you do it for your Moya podcast?
See, I should mention that
I will have fun with the editing.
Oh my god. You've edited me before, so you know yes. What you're in for.
You are one of my favorite people to edit, so this is fun.
I should mention that I woke up like all of 2 hours ago, and I am on my second cup of coffee in my giant Pinkie Pug coffee mug.
Awesome.
There's our opening line.
Yeah, there Perfect. We go. Well, my mom actually got me a coffee maker for Christmas, and so because of that, I drink coffee now.
Congratulations. Welcome to the deliciously aromatic and caffeinated side.
I am an adult, I think. Not really. Maybe. Kind of.
And I am drinking V8 with a squirt of Mio Energy.
Wow. That's a thing.
I've got water and lemon juice. It would have been a red stripe, but I said, nah, probably best to stick with water tonight.
That went so into like mentally advanced series Fluttershy right there. I'm sorry.
Fluttershy.
So what are we here to record today?
Anyways, yes. Hi, everyone. This is our wrap-up for Deconstruction is Magic for season one of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. I am Tessa.
Season wrap-up.
Something blah blah in winter, which we are in the middle of, and it's cold.
It is cold.
I am Tessa.
And I am Noel.
And I am Gurf.
Hey, we're all here.
So we just watched for the first time the first season of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Hooray!
Yes, we did. Yes.
And we started in, what, July? We started watching it again, I think is what it was.
Yeah, because we hit, episode 4 or 5 and then BronyCon happened?
So, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, wow, that was like half a year ago.
So we've been doing this for quite a while already, because this is middle of January.
Oh my god.
Of the next year!
Yeah.
So, hooray.
Wow.
It's amazing how projects can just, like, sneak up on you in terms of how long you've been doing them.
Oh my god, yeah.
And then you've been doing them forever, and you say, oh man.
A 26-episode show will literally take you half a year to do.
Seriously, yep. And then we still have 3+ seasons to go, and 2 movies, plus one more, and then one more after that.
2017, maybe, and then, oh yeah, that's right, I guess,
there's one
the
more.
Second one is like, hey, here's a maybe for a movie. Bam! Yeah.
Yeah, there's one more EQG, and then there's the actual pony movie proper. That's
right.
Supposed to be 2017. Anyways.
And if it ever does end, you can always loop back, because we still have all the 80s and 90s.
It's true.
We've totally got, yeah.
This train never ends.
I watched Very Minty Christmas for the first time this year, and that was a thing. Alcohol was involved.
I sincerely do want to go and watch the G1 stuff now, though.
G1 is awesome. Like, it's definitely a very, very 80s cartoon, and it's got all the trappings of an 80s cartoon, including it's very, very obvious that the product placement in there is, like, very, very blatant, but that's kind of 80s cartoons in general.
Right.
I'm also a huge fan of Sunbow animation, and a huge fan of, like, G.I. Joe and Transformers, and all the people who worked on those worked on G1.
Yeah, I still really, really like G1. It's aged how it's aged, so
yes.
But it's still a lot of the good of G4 was taken from G1, and then all of the bad from G1 became G3, so
it'll be interesting to go back as a no longer a beginner.
Yeah.
Well, it was so bizarre watching. Anyways, I'll shut up, because that has nothing to do with this.
We got our time machine fixed and went forward in time when we did the podcast that does backward-looking in time to the 80s My Little Pony, and then brought that back to the current time.
See, it's weird. So I guess I am going to this. It's weird to me, like, G3 as a thing is weird to me, because it's weird that it comes before G4, if that makes sense. Because it feels to me like somebody was handed the remainder of G1 that G4 didn't use and told to make something out of that. And that's what they did. It was make G3. Except G3 came first. So that doesn't work.
Little do most people know, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic is actually a large experiment in temporal paradoxes.
Have I mentioned my two co-hosts are fans?
Oh my god, yeah.
I would mock it, but this is exactly me and my friend Julie with Transformers.
So, the structure and stuff, not really, but anyways.
As you can tell from Tessa's manner of speaking, she is Pinkie Pie.
Yes. Yes, I'm on a lot of caffeine and sugar and woke up not too long ago. And so the combination of all three of those things is a thing.
So let me go ahead and throw out a prompt here for it.
Yeah, go for it.
We'll just kind of go around. Just take a minute or two, just kind of sum up feelings on season one as a whole.
I still really freaking love season one. Like I said at the beginning of the project, it's kind of a weird season for me in the whole because I don't think it's the best one. But it's still, out of all of them, there's something special about that one, I think, just because it's the one I started with. So it's got some weird nostalgia wrapped up in it. I was surprised going back through it at how many episodes didn't hold up quite as well for me, because I was thinking it would hold up a little bit better. It's, some of my favorite episodes are still in that season. Then some of them kind of fell a little bit flatter for me than I was expecting them to. But that's okay. It's just, it's weird because I've always thought of that. And a lot of the fandom thinks of season one kind of on a pedestal. And I think in part that's because Lauren Faust was still around for it. But some of it just doesn't work quite as well.
I like how Lauren Faust is up on a pedestal.
A little bit. I gotta, yeah.
Tipping my hand a little early there, but.
No, she kind of is. But it is largely thanks to her that the G4 became what it was. I just kind of think people did better with it once she left. Anyways. That will get me, like, eviscerated.
Maybe one more comment than the entirety of the blog has gotten.
I was going to make a joke about our other viewer might find this interesting, but...
We've been retweeted a couple times by Equestria Daily.
Yes. Still didn't get any comments out of it. People, please leave comments.
Yeah, right?
Please.
I know definitely we have some readers. They just don't leave any comments.
I don't want it to just be half the comments are just me and Tessa being like, hey.
Yeah.
Or the, how would you like your search engine optimization to, oh, and your comment was great.
Yeah, spam bots. Yay.
Yeah.
So, as I had mentioned in my intro post thingamajigamabob, I came into the series halfway through season two after kind of having a slight idea of what was going on with season one. So, I have this weird temporal shift whereby season one has this strange, like, chronologically altered thing. So it's not the first thing that I saw, and therefore it's, I don't know if that means anything at all, but it does have a special, if slightly temporally shifted, place in my heart as well. One of the things that I used to do prior to seeing subsequent seasons was rewatch all of the previous episodes of all the previous seasons. After a while, that got tedious, so I stopped doing it. So this was actually the first time in maybe a year or two or something that I went and watched everything from the beginning again. And one of the things that I noticed was my perception and reaction to a lot of the episodes and a lot of the characters and their antics was very different this time around. As I mentioned many times in my posts, I had large problems with Pinkie Pie and I had large problems with Rarity in season one. And actually, I never got Pinkie Pie until sometime later in season two. So from that standpoint, as I was however many years ago at this point in the series, I was still very much, oh my gosh, Pinkie Pie, table flip, get out. And certain episodes that I remember, very fondly, for example, Applebuck season, I was like, oh man, I love this episode. And watching it again, I say to myself, well, I mean, it was okay, but it just seems a little different. And Ticketmaster, for example, was my recollection of it was, wow, more like Snoremaster. But after watching it again, I said, you know what? That's actually a pretty good episode.
You know, that was a satisfying nap.
Yeah. And wait a minute. Rewatching the season, at least for me, was kind of, in some cases, it was an inversion of my previous experiences with the different episodes. But in other cases, for example, Winter Wrap-Up and Dragonshy, which were my favorite episodes of the season, and Dragonshy in particular, those remained as such, and love for Fluttershy continued growing exponentially until it reached a Flutterplex and then continued beyond that.
You will love her!
Yes. So I guess that was a little more meta than the, yes, I enjoyed season one quite a bit. Like Tessa mentioned, it is kind of up on a pedestal in some regards, and it also is in a kind of a strange place in some regards, because a lot of people were saying that, okay, season one, they didn't really find their footing, they didn't really know what was going on with the show, or what direction they wanted to take it, or, they had the EI on there, so they were constrained by certain limitations, and all that kind of stuff.
I would debate whether or not they actually followed through on that, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, wait till you get to later seasons.
I would argue that the EI really held back some stuff.
Yes.
Like, they do kind of let themselves go a little bit more, even just starting season two.
Right. And to some extent, some of the things did feel a little forced, like, okay, this is supposed to be a show for, you know, a younger audience, and okay, we do have to get this moral through. And watching them again, you know, after X number of times, some of them come across as, okay, yeah, you know, these still hold up pretty well. And others come across as, yeah, this is still pretty heavy hoofed. As subtle as a punch to the face. In any case, I still enjoyed it. And it's kind of the maiden voyage of, okay, so let's alter your expectations a little bit. And then for those who decide to stick around for season two and continue on this ride, we're going to take you in some interesting places. I guess at that time, they probably didn't know everything that was going to go on in season two plus. But, well, here we are. So.
I feel like season one was a lot of them throwing ideas out there that they didn't quite have the follow through on as far as where they were going to go with it. And some panned out, some didn't.
Yeah.
But we're throwing forward again. So.
Oh, we're pros at that. So
I'm so guilty of like doing that over and over.
I still have an opinion to offer.
Okay. Yes, you do. I am so sorry.
I think it's pretty obvious that I'm the one who probably had the hardest time with this season. But I still enjoyed it. I don't want to make it seem like I dislike the season.
Okay.
I do understand why it resonates so much, and I understand why fans hold it up, because they come right out of the gate with the new animation style, with the characters, with the world, and while they haven't fully perfected a lot of it they do still get really well, and it is very catchy, it's very snappy, it's very strong. There is a lot of thought put into this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I do enjoy it, and I understand why it became this sudden big smash and why I think it's important to a lot of people, because this is the introduction to that world. Wherever it goes from here, this is where it started. I do have problems with it in terms of they let a lot of things slide by that I don't think they should have slid by. I mean, for the most part, it's a very good show, but when it goes bad in very, very striking ways.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do that very often, I will say, but when it does, it's one of those ones where you sit there and you're like, how did this happen?
Yeah. And unfortunately, we're not done with that kind of thing yet.
Yeah.
Especially season two, there's a big one in there, and we will have a large discussion about that when it comes.
Yeah. Ooh, boy.
Yeah. And it's the thing is, you know, Lauren Faust deserves a ton of credit for how she reimagined this property, for how she reintroduced this property. But things slid by under her watch that shouldn't have slid by. Choices were made that were questionable. I mean, Gurf, you pointed out that one great episode where there was an animation error where a character was missing a cutie mark.
Yeah, Sapphire Shores.
And there is so much possibility that you could have jumped on that and ran with it. And instead, the animation error that they jumped on and ran with was Derby Hooves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I know you guys are going to have a lot to say in the next season. I will just simply say, I have a mentally handicapped sister whose eyes point in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So you can understand why I'm not very happy that this show in this day and age would go there.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Especially when it's supposed to be an exciting show about adventure and magic for children. If it was an Adult Swim show, that would be a completely different matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the other thing, is that a lot of the people working on this came out of like the grungy, very in-your-face, challenging Adult Swim animation world of like Johnny Bravo and Powerpuff Girls and stuff.
It's worth mentioning that there are writers who worked on South Park who write for My Little Pony. It's definitely a thing, and it's definitely, I think, relevant in where some stuff goes sometimes.
Yeah, and you guys talked about how the EI was almost holding them back. I think also they weren't thinking enough about what does this actually mean when you're presenting this to a child.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to some extent, maybe turning it on its head, maybe, when they said, oh, well, we're just presenting these things to children, so we don't necessarily need to think them through completely, because they're not going to make these connections as a more astute audience might. And it turns out that, oh, you got this huge astute audience.
Yeah.
Well, even then, kids are not as stupid as sometimes we think they are.
Exactly. Well,
and also just things, even if they don't understand them, can still linger.
Yes.
Right. There have been plenty of things that I've seen on TV or heard from other people, and then I'd be like, oh, that sounds funny, or that seems funny, and then start using words or mannerisms or something, and somebody who has more of a sane head on their shoulders is like, dude, stop that. So that was yesterday, and then today, no.
And if I can raise an example, I mean, honestly, out of all the ones I had the most problem with, the one I had the most problem with was still Applebuck Season.
Okay.
For the most part, it is a fun show. It is a fun episode, and I don't mind the slapstick humor, but that they chose to actually bring in the genuine side effects of a concussion, incorporate them into the comedy of the plot, and then not really follow through on what the actual consequences of that would be.
Yeah, and I need to apologize for my reaction to your dealie on that, because I was ignorant to that part of it.
Yeah. I should also point out my sister is mentally handicapped as a result of a severe brain injury.
So. Yeah.
But even just on the broader thing, you know, that could have been a good episode where you then work that into a lesson where a child, if they've hurt their head, can learn what to look for and get help for.
Right.
You know, and again, it's like a lot of the things that they do in this show, you could still take and make a learning experience out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm almost bothered by the fact that they kind of sweep a lot of it under the rug instead of actually doing that.
They get focused on the lesson that they're trying to teach, I think, sometimes, and there's side things that either could be implemented that don't get implemented or kind of misfire in their tunnel vision, I guess, is a way to put it.
Yeah, and are right on the periphery of that tunnel vision going, hey, look at me! But, yeah. You know, it's right on the periphery and therefore you don't see it.
They don't necessarily see it, but people very much do.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, and then that surprises me because a show goes through so many stages of production.
Yeah.
Right.
And how can it go through all of those and everyone still thinks bridal gossip? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, okay. I don't even know if we, well, no, we kind of already started into this.
Yeah. Why don't we just go ahead and roll through these and then we'll move on.
Yeah. No, I was going to bring up the favorite episode, least favorite episode thing, which I don't even know if we need to bring up least favorite episode because I think it's obvious.
Actually, mine is still Applebuck season.
Yours is still Applebuck. So that surprised me a little bit, but not that much. Yeah. Bridal gossip. That was one of those things that kind of slapped me in the face when I watched through it again, going, oh man, this one was not what I remember it being. Man, it's one of the only episodes really for me, I think, of the entire series that I've seen that I was actively uncomfortable watching again. And I don't remember that being the case before, but oh man, it just on so many levels, that one just fails for me.
I was surprised by that episode.
Yeah.
Because I even had someone warn me that there was something like that coming, but I didn't expect it to go as far as it did.
Yeah, it's weird. It's this weird anomaly of an episode because it's not particularly noted by anybody. But when people do talk about it, it tends to be in the big, like, wait, how?
Yeah. But it's one of those ones how it's, you know, you can see how there was a germ of an idea in there.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But then it's like, how did it barrel roll into that? Well, we'll get into the barrel.
Barrel.
But how did it snowball into that much all happened at once?
Yeah, and that's the weird part to me, too, with it is that it's not talked about. And I don't think it's not talked about because people don't want to talk about it. I think it's just not really thought of as being particularly notable. And that might be a result of the writing just not being great in it. And so it's something of an ignorable episode if you take everything else out of it.
Here's a question I have for you.
Yeah.
As fans, do you know, as they play these shows in reruns, do they ever skip any episodes?
I don't know. I know that there is definitely one episode in particular next season that got an edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was re-edited. I know that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could re-edit Bridal Gossip.
Yeah, you couldn't. You would have to just skip it outright. Then the problem with trying to skip it outright is then you miss Zecora's introduction and then she just shows up the next episode with no context.
Right.
And it's weird to me that Bridal Gossip isn't the one talked about when it comes to the race problem in My Little Pony and Over a Barrel is, because I feel like Over a Barrel is an episode that needs talking about as far as that thing goes, but it's a better episode by a lot than Bridal Gossip.
And I agree with that. For all my problems with Over a Barrel, it's one of those episodes where you could break it into distinct parts that are all very actually well done.
Mm-hmm.
But by putting them together in the way they did, it became a problem.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's one of those things where if you took out the extra context that the real world provides for what they were talking about, it's actually nothing particularly wrong with that episode. It's just it becomes kind of uncomfortable.
If you make it not a story about the Native Americans, then the actual moral of the episode is fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun adventure.
It's still one of my favorite.
Getting transformed and how do we fix it?
And again, I would love to see a thing that does like Native Americans in the pony world, just not that story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and I've talked about it in that episode before that so we had kind of this disagreement about whether it was problematic
applying
or not.
Applying other ethnic cultures to other animals.
And I still come down on the idea that it's not necessarily problematic in and of itself. No. I think where it becomes problematic is the fact that these other races don't get used very often. And I would love to see more of the buffalo, and we don't really get to see them very much.
No, and I don't mean so much that it's problematic so much as it's short-sighted.
Okay.
In that this is My Little Pony, where it's all about the ponies, and the fandom is built mostly around the ponies and the merchandise is around the ponies. And instead of letting these kids see their own ethnicities and their own cultures represented among the ponies, they're pushed off into things that are not ponies.
My only response to that is not particularly fair because, again, I have the context of the entire series, and there are examples of different cultures within ponies also.
And if they decided to bring that in later seasons, I applaud them for it.
They don't go way too far into it. And it's also one of those things, too, that we get little snippets of it without it ever really getting, at least not yet. We're coming up on season 5, not too long from now, actually.
But there is a thing where pony culture is pretty much entirely Euro-Westernized.
Kind of.
And everything else, just they're not ponies.
Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah, later on, yeah, you don't really get any hint that is not the case in season 1. So absolutely agreed that watching season 1 and only watching season 1 thus far would definitely lead you to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and again, that's not a conclusion I'm making for the series as a whole. I'm making it for the series.
Right. I gotcha.
But to Tessa's point, though, even, again, throwing forward a little bit, in future seasons, when we do see other cultures within the pony species, they do tend to be snippets, and they do tend to be just, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there. We don't really get into large voyages into other sects of the pony species, I guess it would be.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Equestria is like almost an alternate Earth in that you almost have the Europeans who went to America. There was no slavery, so all the zebras are still basically relegated to Africa, and they're very rarely seen. And then you have this westward expansion coming into buffalo territory.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that that's what they chose to do. I'm not flat out saying that that's a bad idea.
Right.
Yeah.
I just disagree with some of the implementation of that so far.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it could be something, you know, catering to the younger crowd where you say, some of these people, again, assuming you are a Western slash, you know, American...
Eurocentric?
Yeah, you're the statistically average viewer of this thing in terms of, you know, race, gender, and all that. You might think, oh, yeah, I can recognize from school that the American Indians were out west. And, you know, you can make those sorts of connections. But again, the way that they were handled.
I would just say, though, if you took Over barrel.
Almost got all the directions. Through the barrel.
If you took that plot and just turned them all into horses instead of buffaloes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would have actually changed?
Sure.
Nothing really.
Because they're still running through a field. We know the earth ponies, their feet can be pretty powerful in terms of knocking down all the apples as a herd.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely could have been an equally valid way for them to go with it.
I mean, I get them wanting to bring in other creatures just to shake up the visuals.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But then we get the whole thing with the goats and the cows.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a weird world that kind of confuses me when I stop to think about it.
Yeah.
But I know it's not really supposed to be that well thought out.
There's the whole, for lack of a better term for it, furry confusion thing where it's like, okay, so where's the sliding scale of sentience with all of these animals? Especially with Fluttershy thrown into the mix because her thing is actually understanding all these animals.
Right.
And it makes it really, really weird.
And all bears are giant translucent things that have the entire starry sky in them.
Not all bears.
Okay, not all bears.
Lesson zero incoming.
Yeah.
Let me just say, the issue that you have with AKR, I have another writer that shows up for the first time in season 2 that I equally take issue with almost all of her episodes.
Yeah.
And I think Gurf knows who I'm talking about.
Probably. It's been a while. I have to refresh what season 2 things
Mary Luther Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty split between Amy Keating Rogers and Dave Polsky in terms of I don't really know that I want to watch any more of their work.
Mm.
Yeah.
And again, not to say, I mean, Amy Keating Rogers is a very talented writer.
Yeah.
She also plays a mean ukulele.
We got to sit in on her playing at BronyCon 1 year.
But it's like the season finale is like the only episode I came across that just didn't have something in it where I'm just like, ooh, why did you do that?
Yeah.
I'm in a weird position with Amy Keating Rogers because she wrote what is my favorite episode of the series, but that's not until season 4, and it's arguably not for anything but a very specific reason.
Well, one of my favorite writers was Orson Scott Card, and look at where that went.
Yeah. But no, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from with her stuff, and I understand.
I want to stress that despite these seemingly significant issues I had with it, I do still overall enjoy the season.
Good. Yeah, I was going to say, so how about the content or the season itself, you know, the characters, music,
I mean, I don't think they've nailed all of it yet. I mean, I'm still trying to settle into Rarity a bit.
Mm-hmm.
One episode aside, I still haven't fully settled into the Cutie Mark Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
We've had our discussion about how they could angle that, but I do still really love that one episode where it was, the talent show one?
Yeah.
Showstoppers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Showstoppers.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm perfectly happy with how they were handled it. Yeah.
That is one of the best. That is one of the best. I was going to say the best, but I don't think it is. That's one of the best Cutie Mark Crusader episodes.
And I will say, for all the grief I give them, Mitch Larson, Charlotte Fullerton, and Cindy Morrow are fantastic writers. Megan McCarthy handles ensembles beautifully, and I actually think she is the perfect person for the show to have ultimately fallen into the hands of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her stuff is amazing.
I believe in M.A. Larson.
And M.A. Larson is awesome.
And in real life, he's just such a guy.
He's got such a great sense of humor about himself, too.
What a great guy. What a great guy.
Seriously, I'm looking through like him and Charlotte Fullerton's episodes, and those are like my favorites of the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they get better.
I am looking forward to watching more of the series for more of their work. And I will say a lot of the issues that most of the smaller issues I have with the series in terms of things not entirely coming together, in terms of not having fully nailed characters, that's all typical of season one and most shows.
Yeah.
It does take time for a show to find its footing.
It does.
Because you have so many people involved in a show, from the acting to the writing to the directing, that it takes the time for them to kind of settle in and figure it out.
Yeah, definitely.
And I do want to say that I was still thrown with episode 1 and 2 and how it's like, wait, that's not going to be the rest of the series.
Yeah.
We get more of that past this season.
But I will say, as the season went along, that became less and less of a problem.
It's one of those things, like I mentioned in that last episode, that season 3's finale can kind of fall into this category too, but not really. It's one of the only season finales to kind of stick with the more slice of life-ish type feel. Everything else, we get a lot more high adventure type stuff. The show still largely follows the slice of life stuff, but we...
You're talking about the best day ever.
Yes, best night ever is what I was talking about. Yeah. It's the most in tone with the rest of the series as far as season finales go.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed it a lot, because as I mentioned throughout the thing, I'm really a fan of the slice of life and
kind
of exploring the characters. Yeah. And that finale, it was all about exploring the characters and really their expectations for this night that's been building up for the entire season.
Yeah.
And then watching everything deteriorate in front of their eyes.
Which I would argue wasn't building for the entire season. It was mentioned in like 2 episodes.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean,
well, you had Ticketmaster and then you had them making the gowns.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't explicitly being talked about, but we had stuff like Rainbow Dash's aspirations for the Wonderbolts and her love for them. That was touched on a lot.
But basically what I mean, though, is I never felt like it was just always looming above the season.
Okay, that's fair.
I guess having the 2020 hindsight, you know, you say, okay, well, we know this is coming up. And so we kind of have the veneer of everything that we see throughout the season one can be like, ah, this is why they put that in. And this is where it's tying into the finale from the standpoint of Fluttershy and the animals and Rarity always trying to impress everypony and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we did talk about least favorite episodes. What was everyone's favorite?
I'll give you one guess what mine was. It's Dragonshy.
Yes. And I know that wasn't universally the opinion on it, but that's still one of the ones I look back on as one of the best ones of the series for me.
Yeah. And for me, obviously, it's a very Fluttershy-centric episode, and I absolutely adore Fluttershy. But beyond that, it does do a good job at having a little bit of slice of life stuff in there, in that it's wake up the next morning and, oh, what is the next thing that might be destroying Equestria? Parasprites? Nah, we took care of them already. How about a dragon that's going to fall asleep for 100 years and just destroy it? But, you know, also a little bit of adventure, climbing this mountain and fighting dragon. But again, what I keep on coming back to is just the character exploration and character development. Yeah, maybe a little overblown and slapsticky at times as well, but especially when they're confronting the dragon, we really see everybody, except poor Applejack, who just make modern art on that tree with those apples. We get to see everypony's approach to solving a seemingly difficult problem. Maybe that red stripe would have helped here. And at the end, it's just, well, just... stop it. Stop messing with my friends. And also, you're a big beanie. And also, I'm going to kill you with kindness. So if that's okay with you. So anyway, it's maybe, and by maybe, I mean probably largely biased toward being a Fluttershy episode, but I always watch that and have a smile on my face, and the Friendship is Witchcraft parody of it is fantastic. Yeah. Anyway. And extraordinarily and arbitrarily close second place is Winter Wrap-Up. I think that's largely for the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's a darn good song.
Yeah.
The first song that I actually heard of the series was actually the one that I started with in season two, which I didn't actually really like all that much. And then the next song after that was You'll Go Out the Ghostly, which was, okay, you know, this is kind of fun. But it was Winter Wrap-Up that I was like, whoa, this is really fun and catchy. And I would post music at the end of all these posts because for the past three or four years now, I've been listening to nothing but Brony music on my playlist, and I still haven't gotten through it all. And, you know, Winter Wrap-Up was one of the first ones that I grabbed a few remixes or even just the, you know, original soundtrack. And I would stick that in my car, roll down the windows, and just blast it as I'm going down the highway or whatever, because it's just so darn catchy and puts such a smile on my face.
Winter Wrap-Up is kind of a nice peek into what the better music of the series is going to look like throwing forward. Because it was also one of those things that I kind of forgot looking back on it, was just how much of the songs of the episode were just dominated by the little tiny Pinky ditties.
Yeah.
I did still have some analytical issues with the construction of that episode, but it is a really darn fun episode.
Yeah, it is. So, Noel, which one was your favorite?
Cutie Mark Chronicles.
Nice.
That was a good one.
That's a very, very good one.
Which I had some issues with the Cutie Mark Crusaders.
Who doesn't?
Honestly, I was torn between this and Showstoppers. Showstoppers was one of those great ones where it's like they took something that just wasn't clicking with me and it just wasn't working for me and made me go like, oh, and was also just a really darn good episode in its own right that really made those characters for me.
Nice.
Cutie Mark Chronicles was great in that it took them and it took their journey and used it as this framework for giving just these really insightful and thought-provoking backstories for all of our main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And they were all just really well done. I mean, like, especially Pinkie Pie's, and the Twilight one was just so much fun. And also, I just love that idea of the shared, completely coincidental event in their past ultimately led them down the path that would bring them all together. Because I've had some great friendships that have come out of, oh, we lived a block away when we were 5 years old and never even knew.
And sometimes that's that, and you say, oh, small world, and then you go your separate ways. And other times you don't, and you stick together for a while. And those are really neat.
Exactly. Yeah. So mine, which comes as no surprise to anybody because I wrote 5 times the amount I wrote for anything else. Party of One. I was not joking in my little alt text on one of the things that I could have gone for 3 times longer than I did.
Yeah, and I believe it.
That's a high one up there for me, too.
Yeah, it's not until season 4 that it gets dethroned as my favorite episode, and it's not fair to it that the episode in season 4 does that, because it's still not as good of an episode.
Yeah.
But, okay, that was a weird week for me in general, because it was feels dumped from both sides of 2 different fandoms that I am a part, and because there was a completely separate thing that I was sharing with a friend and got to talk about for the first time with anybody with that too, and that had a similar level of just, oh my god, this means so much and I have so much personally tied up in here.
Also your personal fandom for Reversion.
Oh god.
I will not mention it again.
I think Girth has actually seen the second Let's Play out of that.
Oh, yes.
All 10,000 minutes of it. Those are some great 10,000 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
That's all I was thinking of during that party scene.
Well, it's Well, I also kind of name dropped When They Cry in my write-up, too, but that was the other side of fandom stuff that was going on that exact same week, was I was one of my friends finished Umineko, and there's a very similar moment for me in there that just is like, oh, crap, I need to cry forever now. Pinky was not initially my favorite character of the show, which is weird to say now that I've been so 100% Pinkie Pie all the time ever kind of thing for so long. But the first few episodes I watched, like, I liked her. I liked her a lot. But I was way more about Fluttershy the first few episodes I watched.
Which doesn't surprise me, because as much as you talk about identifying with Pinkie Pie, I do see a lot of Fluttershy in you, too.
Fluttershy is definitely, especially 10 years ago, was like 100% who I was kind of thing. And it's been growing past that. And Pinkie is kind of this embodiment of the place I've been striving for and been getting closer and closer to reaching as an actual thing. And again, like I mentioned in that episode, like that was the episode. It wasn't the episode where she became my favorite character, because that happened way earlier in the season. But it was the moment where she got solidified completely as this character that I identified really strongly with. And it's just getting to see that flip side of her that, yeah, she's super bouncy, happy, fun, optimistic, and amazing. But there's still more to her than just that. And there is that other side to her. And it's very, very deep and very buried. But it's a very integral part of who she is. And getting to see her anxieties played out and having had very similar experiences myself, it's just like, and like I mentioned, I projected like crazy all over that episode.
But you were never wrong with any of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
See, and the thing is, Pinkie Pie, I've been a little cold to warm to in the season two. Not that she bothers me or anything like that. I just didn't quite get her as, I mean, she was just a comedic cartoon character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And between Cutie Mark Chronicles and Party of One, just so humanized her as this character with this very unexpected past, who, despite being basically the brightness and positivity of the group, also has a dark side, has anxieties, has parts where she hits a breaking point.
Yeah, and that getting to see that played out and getting to dig into a lot of that was just...
I was impressed with how mature and sophisticatedly handled it was in Party of One. That was an incredibly intelligent episode.
Yeah, it definitely was. And like I said, that remained my favorite episode, and it's still a very close second behind Pinkie Pride.
And if I could just raise one other thing, I actually find there to be, I didn't even notice until listening to the commentary, I know you guys have mentioned in past posts, but it didn't stick with me, that Pinkie Pie and Fluttershy are the same actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find a lot of interesting little echoes between them as characters.
Yeah.
Especially because in this season, we've seen them both hit their breaking point where Fluttershy becomes crazy and Pinkie becomes despondent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's very, very interesting that in their breakdowns, they both hit their breakdown points and they both go in completely opposite directions, which is probably fitting because they are kind of opposites of each other in a lot of ways.
Which also helps to unify them even more. And I think that's also why it's easy to relate to both of them.
Yeah.
Because they do fall into like the parts of a complex psyche, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Even more so than any of the other characters do.
It's interesting because their personalities almost invert slightly when they hit those breakdown points because...
Just as long as they don't evert.
Fluttershy.
Number two.
I lied.
Fluttershy. Gosh.
Carry on, Tessa. And Tessa's hair just suddenly went limp and straight.
Actually, my hair is straight right now. Like for realsies right now.
Whoa.
I straightened it the other day. Anyways, what was I saying? Oh, right. Fluttershy hits her breaking point, and in like all of that introversion, all of that bottled up, pent up frustration. And it's something that you kind of can see under the surface in a lot of episodes with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that all just suddenly bursts forward and that dam just breaks and she becomes just explosively external with it all. Whereas Pinkie, you get the opposite happening.
Yeah.
Pinkie almost masks it and tries to distract from it.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
I very, very nearly went on for another, like literally, it would have tripled my post.
So you should make an addendum post, a special edition post where you do continue.
Well, let me just say that I find it very, very interesting that during the birthday party in general, where that scene happens, is basically Pinkie trying desperately to hang on to who she is. She desperately does not want to lose that. And because she's identified so strongly with her relationship with her friends, that's slipping from her. And that entire birthday party is her desperately trying to hang on to that.
Yeah.
I have to say, you know, as the person coming in, as much as I enjoyed a lot of the season, the late season character study that became Pinkie Pie fascinated me.
Yeah.
So it's deserving of all the words that you throw at it, Tessa.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And all of the feels that you have.
If you did continue on with that, I would love to read all that stuff because I was reading your posts there. I'm just like, wow, this is really good. Oh, no, it's over.
Tessa, we need you to go back for your university for a psychology course so we can read that dissertation.
Oh, Jesus.
We have the time machine somewhere in this podcast already, I think. So, got it.
Well, if I ever go back to school, psychology is one of those things that is like a potential major for me. So, anyways. So I just dominated like a good 15 minutes of that conversation.
It was well worth it.
Thank you.
Seeing as I dominated the beginning of the episode with, we need to talk about things. You're fine. You're in the good.
Cool, cool. All right.
So one of the things that obviously with Tessa and what I mentioned previously with Fluttershy is that many people who watch the show tend to gravitate toward one character, or, you know, maybe two, really click and they really say, ah, I can relate to, or I enjoy this character the most. And I don't know if throughout our previous deconstructions, Noel, if I ever got a sense if you found a character, not necessarily your pony, but, you know, any of the characters there that you really enjoyed.
It's hard for me because I'm someone who in general doesn't do that so much because I study so much the crafting of how stories are done. I'm a comic book fan. I do not have a favorite superhero.
Cool.
Because it depends entirely on who's writing that superhero at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And with this show, it depended on like who's writing. I am one of those people who pays attention to who writes every episode and what all episodes do they do. That's how I always mention all the writers.
I will say there's an element of that in the series, too.
Oh, yeah. There's some big elements sometimes. Ooh.
Pinky gets some really bad writing sometimes. Rainbow Dash gets some really bad writing sometimes. And Rarity gets some really bad. Like all of them do sometimes.
I'll admit the one that I was the least into was Rarity.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's reactions.
It's just weird because I liked her at the beginning of the season, but then as the season went along, I thought that she became a little meaner and a little more vain. Like early on, it was all about she celebrated beauty and she wanted to bring out everybody's individual beauty. And then it became more about celebrating her own beauty and her vision. And then also just the way that she would always use Spike.
Yeah. Yeah, oh boy. That actually gets worse with a certain episode in particular, kind of retroactively making it worse.
I mean, as much as I enjoyed the Diamond Dogs episode, I did not like that aspect.
Yeah.
Rarity is one of those characters that, like, Rarity and Rainbow Dash are both, and it's interesting because I've drawn parallels between them both before, but one of the things that they share in similarity is that I think both of them either work or don't work depending on who's writing them.
Right.
Because both are very, very easily flanderized, and when they're not written well, they are not great characters.
Right. And Apple sometimes runs into that too, where they make her a little too country stereotype.
Yeah, I can see that.
For the most part, though, she's very well handled. And I love that contrast between you'd think Applejack and Rainbow Dash would like really line up, but in reality, they don't. Because while Applejack is still rough and rowdy, she's also a serious business person launching the family business, and Rainbow Dash is still just kind of wild and reckless.
Yeah. AJ gets some, she gets some really good episodes, and they're kind of few and far between, unfortunately.
I was going to say, eventually.
It's funny because she has a reputation within the fandom of being a background pony because she gets so little focus.
Well, she's busy working that family farm.
But no, she does have some really great episodes. And like a lot of the characters, it's weird going back through it and rewatching it because a lot of my love for them comes from specific moments that haven't happened yet in our rewatch. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really weird because it's like, oh, but I love this character. But the reason is, okay.
So now I don't have a specific pony that I've really like gravitated towards, especially even with my fascination for Pinkie Pie. It's not so much that I identify with Pinkie Pie as I just find her a fascinating character study.
Yeah.
And Fluttershy is really fun and nice. Twilight's a really interesting character, even though I wish that they had still done more with her being the new pony in town.
Yeah, that was a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, to be honest, this was the opportunity to do it, and they kind of do miss the boat. To be fair, they do it in a different format later, and I will not talk about that yet.
It's still one of those ones where I watched the first part of the pilot, and I'm like, oh, I see what they're going to do in this series. They're going to follow that thread, they're going to follow that thread, they're going to follow that thread. And then I watch episode 2 of the pilot, and it's like, oh, they just resolved all of those.
Oh, Nightmare Moon.
Not even Nightmare Moon, but Twilight being the new person in town, the whole search for the powers.
Now she's the savior. Hooray. Wait.
Them building their relationships and friendships.
Twilight will get her fish out of water story. It just won't come for a while. And it comes in a completely different place.
Which, again, bothered me less and less as the season went along. It was just right up front. I was so thrown off by the show.
Also, part of, I think, what holds Twilight back a little bit is that
she's more the proxy.
She is the proxy and she remains the proxy, but because she's the one writing the reports at the end, she gets shoehorned into a lot of episodes that she probably doesn't really belong in.
Yeah.
And calls other cultures scary.
She winds up sometimes in episodes just for the sake of showing up and delivering the moral, which one of the improvements to season 2 is they find a way to make that not a thing anymore.
Good.
Yeah.
I admit it could make for some nice moments, but they really ran at their course by like the halfway through the season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it means we get to see less of her, but at the same time, she's not in episodes that she doesn't really need to be in.
Yeah.
So when she's in the episodes, more often it's because she actually contributes something to them.
Well, and that's why I'm looking forward to when Megan takes over, because that balancing of the ensemble.
Yeah. Oh my God. She is so good with ensemble pieces. And Rainbow Rocks.
And I have to say, like, even not to get too negative, but I came into this show not a fan of My Little Pony just because I had never seen it before. And
right.
I leave this season still not a fan of My Little Pony.
That's fair.
And it's just, I don't know, I wasn't able to fully click with, I don't know.
One of the interesting things with the fandom is that a lot of times, and the fandom will get slammed for this quite often, is that you'll have people who say, oh man, this show is great, I love this, and they'll grab every friend that they can find or shout it through a megaphone, you know, from the top of the hill or something. Everybody needs to watch this, and if you don't like this, then there's something wrong with you. And I was going to mention this earlier on in our wrap-up here, but I do have to give you mad props for coming into this with not a huge interest in it from the standpoint of, you know, it's not like, oh, this is something I've been dying to watch forever, let's do this, but coming into and saying, you know, let's...
I just came in because Tessa's fun to write with.
Yeah.
That was a good half of why I asked you to be a part of this, because I loved working with you before on the Farscape thing, and I wanted to do that again.
Half of what I did in Farscape wouldn't even pass our basic censorship that we've imposed upon ourselves.
Yeah. See, yeah, that was, yeah. Going back through some of the Farscape stuff, wow.
Well, that was also the era where I was trying to more intentionally push people's buttons, and I've thankfully pulled back from that. Though, to be fair, Farscape is the show to go there with.
Oh, yeah. No, that was not out of place at all in Farscape. But admittedly, the other half of why I pulled you in for this was because, looking back on it, it was my turn at the, oh, no, I need to share this thing that I love with you and you will totally love it. Wait, you don't like it? Oh.
And it's also, hey, an excuse for you and I to talk again.
Yeah, totally.
Because you're always one of my favorite guests to have on the podcast.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
But no, I should go ahead and say to our readers.
Yeah.
I will no longer be continuing to write for Deconstruction is Magic. I will still be around. I will still be following each post. I'll probably be chiming in the comments. It's a hard show for me to write for just because I don't click with it.
Yeah.
And it's also, Farscape was so easy to write about because there was so much happening from episode to episode to episode, these big, long, convoluted plots.
Yeah.
My Little Pony is a slice of life show. And while I actually really enjoy slice of life, it's hard to write about.
No, I understand that entirely. We're going to miss you a lot. We'll be looking for you in the comments, and I'm still looking forward to having conversations in there with you with it. But yeah, for people who may know him also from Farscape, if you followed us from there, Weston's going to be stepping in season 2 to take Noel's place.
Weston has such a great knack for whimsy and finding the little details.
Yeah.
But I think he is going to click with this project very well.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm looking forward to working with him on that.
I'm more like looking at the broader sweeping things, and there aren't really any broader sweeping things for me to look
at. And admittedly, I do the same kind of thing with a lot of that, but I have the benefit
have like 4 years of broader sweeping things to pull on.
Exactly. I have the benefit of having the entire picture to look at, where you don't have that.
Again, that's why I was like, first episode, I'm like, oh, look at all these broader sweeping things. Second episode, where did they all go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one of the things where...
No, don't leave. Don't.
What I will say is there are bits that are laid down that do eventually pay themselves off. It takes a very long time, and it's in snippets rather than the entire thing being focused on it.
And I think that's also why I like Cutie Mark Chronicles so much, is because it gives you suddenly this backstory that suddenly makes everything a little more broader and sweeping.
Yeah. And we start getting more and more of that, especially as certain characters start getting introduced.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I will still be watching.
Mm-hmm.
I will still be chiming in the comments, so I will still be around. I'm glad that I no longer have to write like 600 words a week about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and for me, having you here as the, how do you say it?
Outside voice.
I wanted to say outside, but I didn't want to say you're on the outside because you're not part of the herd. But yeah, an outside voice.
That's why I'm leaving. You guys never let me be a part of anything.
I know, get out. Don't let the door hit your tail on the way out. But okay, full disclosure, you know, I go to Brony conventions, I have Brony music, artwork, fan fiction. I mean, I love the community in it. And my brain is in this 24/7, 23.5/7, because sometimes I need to, you know, actually do some work. But
you are remembering to eat in there, right?
Details.
I'm worried. You're looking a little thin. Have a sandwich.
So having somebody else come in who hasn't been mired in this for so long really did actually give me an opportunity to pull back a little bit and take a look at some of these things. Like, to be perfectly honest, all the issues with Bridal Gossip, the first and the second and the umpteenth time that I watched that, none of the cultural issues and none of those issues ever even registered with me. Either I wasn't paying attention to them or I was just not paying enough attention or whatever. And I think I mentioned this in my write-up as all, where I said, well, I never focused on any of this because I didn't find it relevant or interesting to me enjoying the episode. But by listening to your discussion, and a lot of the discussions I didn't really take too much part in, so I apologize in advance. Well, it's not really advance anymore, but time paradox. But, you know, seeing this and going, oh, there is a lot more to look at, not just here are all the reasons why you can enjoy the show, but also here's some of the reasons why you should be critical of the show. And here's some of the things that I didn't think about the first X number of times to go through. And that helped to really, in some cases, make me say, this is a problem that I know that they resolved or they addressed later on down the line, or maybe they haven't. And this still is an issue that I just haven't been really thinking a whole lot about. And then other times really get a deeper appreciation for the kinds of things that you do need to take into account when you're putting together an episode, or the kinds of things that people who are not ridiculous like me might actually pick up from the show and take away from it, which might be a completely different takeaway. So having that, and again, mad props to you for coming in to something that is understandably like, why would I possibly want to watch this again? And really... deconstructing it the way that I think turned out to be very, very good.
Yes.
Understatement of the year.
I do want to say that definitely there are a multitude of points in writing up for this season where, Noel, you did have me step back and reevaluate a lot of stuff that I didn't really take into consideration before. And I really appreciated your angle on it, even though it led to some arguments in the comments sometimes. It made me think about stuff again. And like I said, I do want to apologize again for my reaction to your reaction in episode 3, because I never thought of it before.
No, and you know, if that wasn't something that was a part of my life, I probably wouldn't have thought of it either. You know, it's one of those things where it's something that's just become so visible over the last few years as I've come into contact with certain people of, there are a lot of things that most people just don't even think of as being a problem. And then unless you're the person who is being represented by that moment.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
In constructing some of those pieces, I even then got some feedback from some of them before I sent it along. So I just want to make sure it wasn't just me like yelling openly into the
Right.
No, I mean, even when you have the best of intentions and you try to be as conscientious.
And that's the thing is, over a barrel, they actually brought in a Native American consultant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, which was an improvement over Bridal Gossip.
And it still turned out the way it did.
Yeah. Even with your best intentions, yeah, sometimes it just goes by and it's not necessarily that you're a terrible person for being ignorant or not picking up on these things. I mean, it's just that's part of how it is being a human as opposed to a pony or whatever. But obviously they have those issues as well. But anyway.
And thank you both. I hope it never came off as me saying the entire show sucks because of these parts.
Oh, no. Don't worry. There's been plenty of that on the internet already.
I pride myself on my last 8 years of being a critic of not doing that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's so easy to do that or just and point your finger.
See, yeah. And a lot of my criticism, I'm glad to hear that that is stuff that over the next few years, they actually do try to learn from.
Yeah.
Because that's what I hope for.
Yeah. And like I said, I am very, very interested in getting into some conversations with you on specific episodes in the future. It's just in this way, it makes it so like you can just have those interesting conversations instead of having to come up with something to talk about when it's like, oh, Fluttershy rescued an animal from a tree. Let's write 5 paragraphs on that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Bird in the hoof.
Yep. But that said, leave it to the bronies to do just that.
And it's again, how do you talk about slapstick humor without just listing what happened?
Yeah, that's true.
I do want to say I did genuinely enjoy this experience. I look forward to seeing where the project goes down the road, and I will still be hanging around on the periphery.
Awesome. We will be happy to have you back for more audio conversations in the future, and I'm looking forward to talking to you in the comments.
Absolutely.
All right. So anything we want to do to wrap up?
Song and dance?
I was going to say podcast wrap up, but that's been done 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Now I would say, well, predictions for season 2, but, oh, no, okay. So, no, predictions for season 2. What's one or two things that, based on the events of season one, which, as we know, may or may not necessarily do anything?
Well, I'm predicting that they'll never again mention Derpy Hooves.
Nope.
I'm predicting that...
aside from stuff like that, let's say.
I'm predicting that not a lot's going to change overall in terms of, like, the characters are still going to be doing all what they do, and the Cutie Mark Crusaders are still going to be searching for their cutie marks. I'm guessing Applejacks is still going to be running the Apple Farm.
Yeah.
Sure.
It doesn't strike me as a show where big things change.
Correct. Yes.
So it's a question of what little things are going to pop up.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a hard question to try to answer. I mean, especially because the show is not one that typically changes the status quo very often.
Yes. Right. And that's why I want to say that when things do kind of change, it is like, what? So it's very interesting.
Right. And I would say the revelation of Pinkie Pie was a pretty significant change.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because while it doesn't change her, it changes how we entirely look at her for the better. And I would hope for more moments like that, more moments where you just pull back the sheets and give a deeper context to something.
Yeah.
We do get more of that coming.
Good.
Then there's also... sometimes not more of that. Right. So
I know a lot of it's probably going to be a lot of like what we got here, just different things.
Yeah. What I will say is that season two breaks things down into a lot more small group stuff. You'll get a lot more episodes that are focused on a couple characters rather than focused on the whole. And that's actually a criticism I've had for season two in the past, but actually thinking about it, it might not be so much a negative.
Well, and I'm also going to be curious to see season two because I know about the behind the scenes shakeup where, you know, Lauren Faust left, but was still kind of consulting for at least part of the season. And they were still kind of building on stuff that she set up.
Yeah.
And then they just don't have a head writer for the rest of the season.
Right.
It's just the group of writers who mainly worked on season one just continuing to work together.
Pretty much, yeah.
As Megan McCarthy kind of gradually becomes the head writer starting season three. Yeah.
And the writhing mass of bronies on the internet seeping into the actual writing of the episodes and the actual animation and things like that.
Speaking of the character I mentioned.
Yeah, in some ways that's a very good thing. In some ways it's not. So we'll get to that.
And it's really interesting to see how the relationship between the show staff and the community really begins changing as the series goes on.
Yeah.
Because at this point, it was still very much everyone was taking a look at it going, whoa, what is this show? This is great. And then the writers going, whoa, why are there a bunch of grown men and women watching this as well? I know it's supposed to be for parents, but these people don't have kids yet.
And I have to say, though, I still liked that revelation that I had of the reason why there's so many people is because the characters are in their early 20s. They're fresh out of college. They're going into the workplace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much a show about people in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree entirely with that.
Yeah, I can see why they related to it so much.
Yeah.
There will be eventually a discussion about why the relative ages in Equestria Girls has nothing to do with relative ages of the ponies.
And I will say what I'm curious looking at for season two is with there not being a single controlling writer, how will each writer handle their batch of episodes? Will like each writer kind of do their own thing?
They have their own little microcosms going on.
And how much of it will be like creating a group thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or which writers just decide to write a lot of bad for an episode, Meriwether Williams.
And I forgot to say, Gurf, it has been a pleasure meeting you through this project.
Oh, yeah. I guess I've never mentioned that as well.
And for someone who had never written like a deconstruction style blog before, I thought you settled into it very quickly.
Oh my gosh, your stuff's been great.
Even though I never clicked on any of them, I actually loved you really bringing up the fanfic and the music videos.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's something that is relevant and it's something that Nolan and I weren't going to do on our own.
Yeah.
And honestly, the only reason I really never clicked is I've tried to keep myself out of any of that while watching the show.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people also do. Like the writers, they never look at any of the other stuff.
Well, legally they can't.
Yeah, so. Yeah, they go to the conventions and they know about everything.
That's one of those really weird phenomenons too, is that like especially with some of the background ponies, the personalities that have been crafted for them through the fandom.
Yeah.
And so you do have something like Derpy Hooves, who has this massive fan following and very, very different interpretations and very different implementations within fandom works than from each other and then from what the show did.
At least Octavia's voice was okay.
I liked Octavia's voice.
Yes. I mean, it wasn't like a nasally, like, well, I like playing the bass or the cello. I don't even know which it is.
Wait, whose voice?
Octavia got her first speaking line in Rainbow Rocks. She was the one playing the cello in Best Night Ever.
Yeah.
And the fandom has done stuff with Octavia and Vinyl Scratch, and they both have established fan voices at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't think they can give Vinyl Scratch a voice at this point.
No. If it's not no whacking, there will be blood.
Well, there's this theory hanging around there now that Vinyl, canon-wise, might be mute just because we've never heard her say anything, and they've specifically had her not talk, even in chapter books and stuff that have been written.
Hmm.
Like the Rainbow Rocks novelization, which is not particularly good.
Most junior novelizations aren't.
It's pretty bad. I actually haven't read any of GM Barrow's stuff, and I really need to.
Likewise. I want to pick them up at the library.
They're apparently actually pretty good. It's just the Equestria Girls novelizations are
not so much.
are pretty atrocious. But specifically in the Equestria Girls novelization stuff, Vinyl communicates through texting. And only through texting. She doesn't talk.
That's interesting. I never actually heard of that thing about it before. That's really interesting.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I don't think they can't give her a voice at this point, just because no whacking is so ingrained as the voice for her.
Yes.
And obviously they can't. That would be very problematic to try to hire her for it.
Well, what if they actually hired a deaf actress who had that accent?
That would be interesting. That would be really interesting, actually. They could. Yeah. It's just one of those things that if a voice ever comes out of Vinyl Scratch and it's not no-acking, the fandom's going to explode.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily in itself the end of the world. She's one of those characters that showed up for all of 30 seconds and became this massive fan character over time. And she is back here and there in other stuff.
See, and that would actually be really interesting of having a character who is deaf-mute who is also a music DJ.
Yeah.
Right.
That's always been my thing about Derby Who is if you have a character who has a visible handicap, have them be like the town accountant or something like that. You know, have them still have something that they're still excelling at.
Yeah.
Instead of making them the goofy character.
That's one of those things, too, where fandom interpretation varies really, really wildly on her. Yeah. One of my favorite implementations of her is in the massive can of worms that is the Doctor Who and Pony crossover bits because of the existence of Doctor Who's. She is almost always the Doctor's companion.
Okay.
And that's really fun. And there's some really, really good and really, really loving fandom interpretations of her. There's also some really, really bad fandom interpretations of her.
Yeah, and I was also going to mention the really loving interpretations of her as a partner or as a mother or as a whatever. Those are the most heartwarming.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Her and Dinky as a thing within the fandom is heartwarming. There's another character the fandom kind of latches on just because of similar colorization.
Yeah.
The fandom latched on is, this is Derpy's daughter. And there's a lot of really, really heartwarming stuff out there about the two of them.
And you're like, wow, she is the best mother ever.
And that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
And part of why talking about Last Roundup is going to be such a... So, okay, I just want to throw this out there. I think what I want to do with that is I think we are going to talk about it. It's a combination of, oh my gosh, this character got acknowledged.
Yeah.
But like this.
But at the same time, it was done very poorly.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have seen the clip of the unedited version, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do feel like the edit, that'll be something that we get into, I guess, at the time. But it is one of those things that it's also really unfortunate because of the fact that it was handled so badly and the resulting chaos over the whole thing meant that it's very, very difficult at this point for them to
do something like that again.
Do anything else with her other than what they've done with her throughout everything, which is she's put in as an Easter egg in a lot of places.
See, and then that also is where I'm talking about of like, I would like to see them try to make a learning moment out of that instead of sweeping it away.
Yeah,
I would too. But at the same time, it's one of those things that
But then again, Bridal Gossip was meant to be a learning moment episode.
They got burned hard from Last Roundup from both ends. Yeah. And it meant that they are very, very nervous about using the character in any capacity other than what they've used her as up to now.
If they want to borrow a few writers from Farscape.
Oh my God, that would, wow. That would be a thing, I guess. God, what would the writers of Farscape write for this show?
Everybody dies.
Don't you remember that Crackers episode where John goes insane?
Well, yeah, I brought it up in Party of One.
Yeah,
that was, oh my God, that episode was amazing, though.
So yes, I am looking forward to season two.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to reading what you guys have to say about season two, and I am looking forward to not having to write about season two.
Hooray!
But yeah, no, I wish you both the best of luck going forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for having had me here. I know it didn't fully work out. You didn't fully bring in a new fan.
Yeah, that's okay.
I don't think that was really the intent. It was more...
Oh, no, I know.
You know, let's get the thing with a Baronia Pegasister and a normal person walk into a bar. I think that's what happened. And we had our drinks. Now it's final call. And, you know, we say, well, time to go home.
Closing time.
I think Weston is a more suited normal person for this show.
Yeah. No, he is.
And also as a father.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see how that affects his view of it too.
Yeah.
That will be interesting. Yeah. I didn't think about that, but that will be very, very interesting. That'll be, what's it called? A word. What is the word?
It is
I
a word.
I can't think of
the perspective.
Perspective.
Yeah.
That is a perspective that I will be interested to see. But anyways, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thank you very much for reading along, for those who have, and for those who will in the future and stumble upon this and go, what the heck is this thing? Thank you very much. We're looking forward to seeing you all again for season 2, and have a good night.
You stomp your whole self in, you stomp your whole self out, you stomp your whole self in, and you stomp yourself about. You do the pony pokey, and you give a little shout.
Come out!
That's what
So I'm going to be starting a blog on Amy Keating Rogers Pound Puppies.
Oh, man.
I have not been looking forward to trying that one. I do want to check out Littlest Pet Shop, because I really have been enjoying Mitch Larson.
M.A. Larson is awesome.
I believe in M.A. Larson.
Yeah, okay, I'm shutting up until we get started with that.
And you know what? We made it the entire way through without saying anything about Spike being a butt.
Well, I think that's because I covered that all in one post.
That is true.
That's one of those things with Spike episodes is they're generally considered to be subpar by the fandom, mostly because the focus tends to be thrown on Spike either being a butt or being the butt monkey.
Yeah.
I think he makes a very good supporting character. It's hard for him to carry an episode on his own.
Right. And, you know, Owl's Well, It Ends Well, I still think it was a well-made episode.
It was. It definitely was.
It's just, yeah, you're not that interested in Spike.
So the one thing I do want to, like, work out, Noel, do you want to talk about where you're not going to be back next season in this, or do you want to?
Well, yeah.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if you wanted to make that a separate thing on its own, like if you're going to post something, or if you wanted to do it in this.
And this is why you're all trusting me to be the one to edit the final cut of that.
Do, do, do.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.